Hi there. Welcome. Thanks for joining us. Nice to have your company once again on the chat room, doing the chatting, the Dean of Sydney, Philip Jensen. Nice to see you again, Philip.
It's great to be here again, Cal. I do enjoy our chats.
We're going to talk about what's happening to religion in Australia because the census figures were released fairly recently. And Philip, they show a sort of explosion and an interest in Eastern religions. Is that what they really show?
No. The census is a very confusing thing, especially when you only get snippets of it. I haven't read the full thing of it yet, and it's quite some reading. But what are we talking about? It's what people have ticked in a box.
Yes.
That's what we're talking about.
It's not what I go to church on Sunday or what I do. It's what I tick.
It's what I tick.
Yes.
And I always laugh when they talk about this is the fastest growing religion in Australia. You know, if you started with two people and you got to 10, that's a massive growth. If you start with zero, then any growth is infinite. You know what I mean? Christianity may have 70% or 68% or something like that. Very hard to be the fastest growing when you've already got 68%.
Yes, and most of those, I suppose, are box tickers rather than attenders in a sense.
That's right. And there's silly statistics, you know, like the most dangerous game to play in the world is lawn bowls, because more people die playing lawn bowls than any other game.
The fact they're closer to their heart attack's got nothing to do with it.
Croquet might be worse, because they've got mallets to help them along as well, I suppose. But those kinds of
croquet
statistics.
Croquet rage. I like the idea.
There's a possibility, isn't it? And so they reflect all kinds of things. A lot of the Eastern religion growth is a reflection of our migration policies. We've had a large number of people from China and from Southeast Asia who bring Buddhism in. And of recent times, the second biggest group that we're now getting in is the Indian subcontinent. So naturally we're getting Hindus.
Whatever they have, they bring with them.
Yeah, that's right. Overall, I think the two groups that are coming from a Christianised background are New Zealanders and British. But their religious affiliations are very, very low. So that's just bringing in more non-religion people. As best I could see, the number of Christians actually grew.
Right.
The percentage declined.
Right. So it didn't quite keep up with population, but we're still growing. There's still more people becoming Christians.
That's right. Yeah. And interestingly, it's an anecdotal thing. I can't demonstrate this, but around Sydney anyway, one of the fastest growing parts of Christianity are the Chinese. So we've got lots and lots of Chinese churches in Sydney now, a lot of Korean churches in Sydney, a lot of Chinese churches in Sydney. So that in actual religious attendance terms, my suspicions are that we're seeing many more Buddhists become Christians than we're seeing Christians become Buddhists.
That's the reality, and that's what reporting the census disguises as a smokescreen. It's still the case that there are some Aussies growing up in nominal Christian families or nominal nothing families who decide they find Eastern religions, Buddhism or one of the others, really fascinating. Why do you think that is?
Well, once you turn your back on Christianity and want to look for anything else, what are your options? I mean, atheism is so barren to the soul.
It's a vacuum.
There is no soul.
Yes.
It's a vacuum. It's, it's a denial of rather than a positive assertion of.
Yes.
And it really just turns you into a materialist and a money grubber. So if you've got any sense of wanting some values beyond the cost of your real estate.
Or some meaning or something.
Some meaning, then you've got to turn elsewhere. Now, the novelty of Eastern religions, it's so very, very different in its way of thinking, its way of feeling, experiencing life. It creates meanings for people. Is part of it. It's partly the glamour of travelling to the Orient and seeing quaint and unusual things.
So you're saying it's like the explosion of interest in Thai food.
Yes.
It's new, it's interesting,
yes,
it's exotic.
That's right, and a little bit of it's nice.
Yes.
Would I like a complete diet of Thai food? Peanuts can wear thin. You know, a little goes a long way, but every now and then it's nice.
Yes.
And that's how many people are approaching Eastern religion. As consumers.
Mm. And a lot of Eastern...
Which is very Western. You know, they approach the East.
Not the way Easterners do, but the way Western consumers do.
Pick this little bit of it and that little bit of it. And it's sometimes packaged very positively for West. So that, I don't know if you remember that film on Gandhi some years ago.
Yes.
Complete nonsense. Historical gobbledygook. It really was completely wrong. But It presented the man, and he was a great man, greater man than, excuse me saying so, you or I.
Yes, yes.
But it presented him in a way which was just made that form of life attractive.
Mm.
But there were some hideous things about the life of Gandhi and his religious practices.
But the Dalai Lama did a lecture tour of Australia, and he just comes across as a likable man. You know,
lovable.
He laughs and he's giggly and, yes, you know, yes. And gentle and all that, yes, sort of thing. So you think, oh, well, there's got to be something nice about this.
That's right.
Richard Gere says it's as glamorous as Hollywood being a Buddhist.
That's right.
Yes.
And tolerance is one of the things our society is very big on. So I want religion, but I want tolerance. And Eastern mysticism seems very tolerant, partly because social justice is not very strong in Eastern religion.
So it will put up with anything?
It'll put up with most things, that's right. And it's about my own individualism, which again is something very Western. Westerns, we like the idea that it's about my self-fulfillment. Mm. You can find fulfillment in your particular brand of religion, I find fulfillment in my brand of religion, but we never say the other's wrong.
And mysticism doesn't need to have much content in it. It's a feel-good sort of thing, isn't it?
Best to have less content. The less you can say and know, in a sense, the better. It's the journey inwards, and ultimately it's into the nothingness.
Mm.
It's to reconnect yourself with that world soul which has no individualism in it.
Yes. I run into people who say they are monists, you know, it's all the same and I'm all just becoming part of all the rest of it, which sort of doesn't help you solve any problems in life, but it's a cozy thing.
But it does deal with suffering. I mean, at the heart of Buddha, I'm no great expert on Eastern mysticism or Eastern Buddhism or Hinduism, but at the heart of it lies suffering,
right.
The belief in the reality of suffering, but also the belief in the unreality of it in Nirvana, that you actually are moving to an acceptance of suffering. Now, atheism has no answer for suffering.
Yes.
I mean, in the end, atheism...
It just happens.
Just happens.
Mm.
And why do you call it good? Why do you call it bad? It just is.
Yes. Yeah.
Whereas, that's stupid. Everyone knows suffering's awful. And so Eastern mysticism says, yes, suffering is the normal state of this world. And it gives you a meaning for suffering and it teaches you how to accept the suffering that you are having.
I mean, I'm no expert either, but I got this impression that Buddhism says the suffering happens because you care too much. If you care less,
That's right. It
will hurt less.
That's right. And so there are other forms. You can go back into the ancient world. Stoics were like it.
Oh, really?
Very much the detached life.
Yes. Yeah.
Helps you cope with it.
Marcus Aurelius.
Yes.
Also popular when Gladiator came.
The world soul is moving in a particular way, and you attune yourself to it, and suffering is part of that. When you see yourself as an individual with rights and personhood, then you actually fight against your suffering, and you suffer more. When you go with the flow, then you suffer. You come to terms with suffering.
But when Westerners say, "Oh, that bit of that religion looks interesting," or "That bit looks interesting," I'll take that, thank you, from the smorgasbord. Do they know what they're buying? Do they understand the package?
Generally not.
Right.
I mean, I don't know much. I don't know a great amount about the different forms of Eastern religions, but I know a lot about Westerners who try and take on a bit of Eastern religion.
Right.
And they haven't got it at all. You can't take bits of it. It's the totality of way of thinking, and it's irrational. Not that rationality matters all that much to Eastern religions, but it's irrational to be ticking on this bit or that bit as explanations.
I met an Asian bloke once. He said, "Oh, these Westerners who do yoga and think they're meditating." He said, "They've got no idea what's actually going on."
Yeah, that's right. And the connections with the various gods. Polytheism that goes with some forms of Hinduism. Reincarnation. Yeah, reincarnation sounds a really nice idea until you start thinking about it. As you think about it, it becomes more and more inane. Really.
I suspect Westerners think, "I've stuffed up this one, I'd like another go." Whereas in Eastern religions, the idea is to get away from reincarnation and become nothing.
And become nothing.
Yes.
Yes. It's not the real pursuit of nothingness. It's the acceptance more of... But for the average Westerner, it's become the nothingness, and it's awful.
If Westerners are not really grasping at it, not really understanding the package they've bought. Let's talk about some bits of the package, because karma is a big part of it. In fact, it's now a popular word.
Yeah, it's
what you know, advertising agents will talk about, you know, good karma doing this, this
good job, karma.
Good karma doing this job for this charity or something or other. You know, it's part of our language now. But do people understand karma?
I would doubt it. I understand the word means action.
Right.
Taking action. But of course, the main thing we know of it is the reaction that comes from the action.
Right.
And so, for most of us, we understand that what I do here will have a reaction, be it for good or be it for bad. And that's the fundamental of the Eastern justice system, is your karma. And so, what you sow, you will reap. Often quoting out of the Bible.
But not in this life, necessarily.
Ah, that's the key. It's not in this life.
Right.
It will be in the next life. And what you're reaping now was from the previous one, or the one before, or whenever. And so karma does dreadful things for people. It teaches you fatalistic acceptance of reality.
Whatever I'm stuck with, I must have been bad in a previous life. Yes.
So I deserve it.
Whatever. But people actually make a joke about it.
Yes.
You know, they find themselves working for a terrible boss, and they'll say jokingly, oh, I must have been awful in a previous life, look what I stuck with.
Yes.
You know, as if it's a joke. But if you think about it seriously, it's awful, isn't it?
It is awful. Because there's no justice in this lifetime.
Mm.
The justice comes only in the next lifetime.
And it lasts for a whole life.
Yes.
You're stuck with it then.
That's right.
Yes.
But I, as an individual, do not suffer it. That's the failure. I'm actually being released from my individualism. It's the, and that's why I will come into something completely different next time.
So in other words, I can't confront someone with justice who believes that. If I was confronted with a mugger with a gun and said, don't do this or you'll come back as a cockroach in the next life, it's unlikely to deter him. He's not facing justice.
Yeah, because he is a cockroach, won't remember having shot you this time.
So it eliminates justice.
It eliminates justice while creating the sense of justice, because people are getting what they deserve.
If people are getting what they deserve...
But they're not getting them as people, necessarily.
it must make it difficult to feel compassion for people who are in bad circumstances.
Well, that's the problem. One of the worst features of the Hindu lifestyle has been the caste system. In fact, they're trying to eliminate it. It's so bad. And you've got people like the Untouchables, whose life was dreadful, absolutely dreadful.
The lowest of the low castes.
And it's institutionalised racism in the worst possible forms, you see. They had no rights, they were slaves of the rest of the nation. But it was always justified on the grounds of karma.
They were born as untouchables because they did something horrible in a previous life.
If they'd been doing the right thing in previous life, they'd be coming back as Brahmins. But because they've been doing such bad things over so many lives of so many times, they are the untouchables.
So
the Christian missions really challenge the very nature of Hinduism by being nice to untouchables. By touching the untouchables, we challenge the very fundamentals of Hinduism. And so while people say, oh, missionaries are dreadful, look at the way they've changed their culture, etc. Well, yes, we did. And I don't think it was terrible in the slightest, because we treated people as humans, which karma does not treat them as humans.
So in other words, charities did not exist in these countries.
No.
Hospitals didn't exist in these countries until Christian missionaries came and started them.
That's right.
And so the Christian mission to the lepers is a Christian mission because the lepers aren't being touched by anyone else.
Right. And Susie, you know, the killing of widows.
Mm.
It wasn't always universally practiced, but it was practiced until it was stopped by, unfortunately, British governments rather than by persuasion of the gospel, but it was British governments informed by Christian values who say women and widows to be protected and cared for, not barbecued.
Yeah.
Eastern religion has a different value of life, and so you value rats, you value monkeys, you value cows, because the reincarnation cycle can take you anywhere into any form.
The flea might have been your great-grandfather.
That's right. So. And so it's a very different view of it. Well, they don't want to take karma, but they don't want to take karma.
If we actually practiced that in our society would be radically different.
Well, our society wouldn't accept it.
Yes.
I mean, the classic is the 1999 Glenn Hoddle fiasco.
For people who don't remember, Glenn Hoddle was the manager of the English soccer team, or as they insist on calling it, the English football team, because they don't understand about that.
Yeah.
He got kicked out.
And he was a great soccer player himself.
Oh, yeah. That, yeah, great player.
And great one.
Knew a lot about the game. Good coach.
Yes.
But he became a Buddhist, didn't he?
Well, I don't know what he became. I'm not sure that he was formally aligned, but he accepted this karma idea and the reincarnation idea. And so when he was being interviewed first on a radio, then followed up by the Times, I think in the discussion about whether we should have disabled athletic competitions, he was saying really, well, no, the disabled are disabled because of karma. They'd done things wrong in the previous generation and they're just where they are now and they deserve where they are. Now, he said, and I can believe it, that while he was quoted accurately, he was misrepresented, misinterpreted.
Right.
And I think that's quite likely because my experience of public media is it's very easy to get the exact words, but so change the context that it really presents you completely differently. So, and that's why it's a little hard to tack down exactly what he said, but in general, he just taught karma.
Right.
That the reason disabled people were disabled was because of previous lives and they're getting what they deserve.
So let's not nail this too strongly to Glenn Hoddle's name and make the poor man suffer more. But what was reported in the media was right. That karma teaches, it's their fault, we don't worry about them. So instead of getting upset about people getting disabled parking stickers who don't deserve them, we eliminate the disabled parking spaces, it's their fault, they're disabled.
It's their fault, absolutely.
Yes.
And what happens then, of course, is the Prime Minister, who was Tony Blair at the time, he went ballistic on it.
Yes.
All the people who were disabled charities, they really got angry about it. The media got angry about it. Everybody was complaining about what this man said. And great kerfuffle took place inside Britain. So much pressure was brought on the Football Association, which is where you get the word soccer from, isn't it, association?
Association. The soccer is a corruption of the word association.
Thank you. I needed to talk to you for some reason. And that they actually sacked him from his job.
Yes.
He lost his job as the coach of the English soccer team. Now, the Indian newspapers, like the Indian Times, they couldn't understand it. Because as they reported, he was just saying what everyone in India believes.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
It was completely orthodox, normal Eastern mysticism. I mean, here you have these people in the Western society wanting to take karma, but when someone actually spells it out...
Horrified.
Horrified.
In fact, it would be interesting for all those people who went to Dalai Lama lectures and the very gentle way he was treated by the media, if you'd opened up what was in his mind and he'd explained all the implications of karma... They would have been horrified.
Yes. Indeed. The way the media treated Glenn Hoddle must have been very worrying. In fact, some Indian commentators did comment on this. Very worrying for the Hindus that lived in England. Because what it was saying was, your religious views are totally unacceptable to this community. If you express these religious views, we'll sack you.
Right.
Basically. Because it's unacceptable to have these views. Now, some civil libertarians did complain. Not many, not enough to save him his job. And his job had nothing to do with it.
Yes.
I mean,
it was just that people were offended by the idea that that anyone who's disabled or unfortunate brought it on themselves two or three lifetimes ago.
Yeah, you can say, look, someone who holds a prominent position in our society shouldn't be offensive. But the prominent position he held was how to kick a ball with your feet.
Yes.
You know, are you saying that we will never play India in soccer? Because they're all Hindus and they believe in karma and we wouldn't want to play...
We will certainly play them in cricket because otherwise we don't get to see Tendulkar bat and it doesn't matter what they...
It's all right. But it means we've got to beat them so as to demonstrate that...
Our system's superior.
It was absurd the man got sacked.
Yes, of course it was.
And it was a, you know, it was a complete nonsense of the idea of religious freedom, freedom of speech, the civil liberties... The media, I mean, their hypocrisy in all this was massive. But it was just what Hindus believe.
Yeah. Well, let's go further down that road because you've unpacked what karma really believes and what it really means and how horrifying it is when we look at that. We need the contrast with Christianity.
Yeah.
We need to see how Christianity is different. So if we do something wrong in this life, what we're facing is not karma. What we're facing is justice. The justice of God, of a person.
Yes, and you face justice for what you have done. Not when you were a cockroach, but as you are as Kel. Yes. That, you face your justice in your life. And that is very important, that we uphold justice. But the beauty of Christianity is the cross. Because it's not just justice, it's also mercy. There's no mercy in karma. Once you have done the wrong thing in karma, you must pay for it. There's no alternative. And that's right in terms of justice, but it's wrong in terms of mercy. There's no mercy. There's no grace. There's no forgiveness. There's no love.
It's mechanical.
Absolutely mechanical.
There's no room for love because it's mechanical. You do this automatically in the next life that happens to you, whereas the one administering the justice, our loving Heavenly Father, loves us. It's a person. It's not a mechanism.
Yes, and that puts your finger right on something very important there, because in certain forms of Eastern religion, some forms of Hinduism, there's hundreds and hundreds of gods, but there's not one that you are answerable to for karma.
Mm.
But there are other forms of Eastern religion. There's no God at all. You don't have to have God to make karma work. Yes, it's just a mechanical system of fatalistic determinism. Whereas we believe in the one God whom we have offended by our lifestyle, the Creator, who has created us to live a certain way, and we're going against his ways. And so it's his justice we have to deal with. But because it's his justice, he also can be merciful. And in the death of the Lord Jesus Christ, he fulfills his justice while extending mercy to us. And so we can have forgiveness, we can have grace, we can have the generosity of God where we're pardoned for what we do. But he does it in a way that upholds justice.
Does both at the same time.
Both at the same time, which is very tricky, you see.
It's what the cross does for us.
That's right. The Westerners love grace, mercy, forgiveness, but they don't want justice.
Mm-hmm.
The Easterners, with their karma, have justice, 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 but no mercy, no love. What we have with the cross is both. Now, mercy without justice is just acceptance of evil.
Mm.
Because you say, well, yes, you shouldn't have done that. I mean, it's a dreadful thing to rape that woman, but we forgive you. It's okay.
No justice.
No justice, especially not for the victim.
Yes.
There's got to be justice. But justice, well, last lifetime you did that dreadful thing, this lifetime, that's why you've got to sit in chat rooms talking to Philip Jensen. So there's the penalty for you. There's the punishment.
If only I'd known.
Yeah, yes. Justice without any mercy is also awful.
Yes.
But when Jesus dies on the cross, justice is met and fulfilled, and God is able to extend mercy and pardon without compromising his justice.
So God can look at me and say, Kel, you're a rebel against me.
Yep.
You're a rebel against heaven. You face justice. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll send my son to die to pay for what you've done.
Yeah.
I mean, that is breathtaking.
It is breathtaking. And who would have thought it up?
Yes.
I mean, it's an extraordinary idea to think up. There are certain elements of Christianity which are so extraordinary that you've got to wonder the mind that would have created it if it's not the mind of God.
What you've done deserves death. All right, I'll die for you.
Yes, and because I die for you, therefore I can forgive you while not at the moment accepting evil. Our Westerners like tolerance. But really, it's not tolerance, it's just indifference. It's indifference to evil.
It seems to me, from what you're saying, forgiveness really only works in Christianity. Can't work in the East because karma has no place for forgiveness, it's just a mechanism. And doesn't work in the West because it's not real forgiveness, it's just dismissing it.
Yeah.
Whereas God forgives and pays the price of the forgiveness.
Sure. There's no forgiveness without atonement, is our technical word. Without one paying the price. And to try and forgive people without actually saying they've done anything wrong, what's a nonsense?
There's a bumper sticker you see on the back of the cars. Bumper stickers aren't profound philosophy, but there's a bumper sticker that says Christians aren't perfect, just forgiven.
Yep.
And it actually says something really, really significant.
It does.
Christians are not pretending to be better. In fact, we're saying we're worse than everyone else.
I don't know whether we're worse.
Or we're just bad.
We're willing to accept we are.
Yes.
See, I always laugh that when you join a golf club, you've got to get a couple of people to say how moral and upright you are.
Yeah.
And when you become a solicitor, you've got to get some testimonies in the newspaper saying what a moral... Solicitors, lawyers, have to be able to be proven to be moral, upright people. When you join a church, the first thing they get you to do is to say you're immoral.
Jesus, I'm a sinner, can I join your group, please?
That's right. It's the only organisation I know where you've got to confess that you're a sinner to get in, that you're immoral to get in. Even in the prisons, everybody's innocent.
Yes.
Only the church acknowledges that we are wicked.
And provides forgiveness.
Because we're the only one that provides forgiveness, thanks to God and what he has done for us. And once you allow for the possibility of forgiveness, then you can face the reality of your own wickedness.
So there's only one door to heaven. It's marked forgiveness. Jesus is that door, but it's real forgiveness. So you've got to face the fact we need to be forgiven to go through that door.
That's right. That's right. Whereas most of the world is desperately rationalising and justifying. And if they admit that they did it,
yes,
they then change the rules and say, but it's not wrong to do it.
Yes. Or other people
have done it. Yes, that's right.
Yes. That's how I work out how I stand. You know, before God, I look at the worst person I know and say, well, I'm okay.
Yeah, I'm better than they are. Yeah. But that's not the way it is with God.
Well, as always, there's much more to be said about what we've been talking about today. The idea is that the chat room is just the start of the chat. You keep going. Talk about these things. Because if you chat about these things with your friends, with your family, you'll be equipped if someone ever asks you a question about it, because you'll have thought it through. So keep on chatting. If you need to know more about this, because this is really important stuff, this is life and death stuff, and as it happens, it's your life and your death. If you need to know more about it, you could visit the Cathedral website, or better still, if you happen to be in Sydney, visiting or living in Sydney, come to St Andrew's Cathedral and hear Philip, who talks about this every time he gets up to speak, which is what makes it so exciting and so interesting. So,
suppose it's in the Bible everywhere, and we're teaching the Bible each week.
Not making it up.
No.
Everywhere you look in the Bible, we find the same
answers,
which is exciting. So pop along to the cathedral if you possibly can. In the meantime, think about the things we've been talking about with mysticism and the trade-off that the world is not recognising. Philip Jensen, thank you for your company once again.
Great pleasure.
And thanks for your company on The Chat Room.